Hi, my name is Emmy from the Vegan for Life podcast, which you can find at vegan-for-life.blogspot.com, and you're listening to Coexisting with Non-Human Animals.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Vegetarian.
Vegan.
Yeah,
let's get it right.
You used the word animals, but I suppose what you should have said is non-human animals. If you want to make the problem,
hello and welcome to a quick episode of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals. I've been busy recently, so I've been neglecting my podcast. Sorry to the 5 people who listen. I was a little afraid of being banned from the internet, having played 3 Jackson 5 / The Jackson songs on episode 30. My intro bumper was from my friend Emmy, who has a new animal rights podcast.
Hi everyone, my name is Emmy. I'm an abolitionist vegan teenager from New Zealand, and I have a new vegan podcast called Vegan for Life, which you can find at vegan-for-life.blogspot.com, and I hope you will listen. Thank you.
You can find Emmy at vegan-for-life.blogspot.com. Today I joined a march against the mining of protected conservation land. Our government wants to mine in New Zealand's national parks and other protected land. It was fun to get out of my house, to nervously walk in silence, and then to arrive with different political groups fighting for control. There were the Green Party, of course, Labour, and my favourite, Unite, a socialist union group. Apparently, people had driven a couple hundred kilometres from Dunedin to Invercargill to join the march. I imagine the Unite guys were not from Invercargill. It was kind of odd, with so many different people there for quite different reasons. Some mentioned being against mining because it could hurt the native animals in the area. These same people mentioned farmland too, and how our clean green New Zealand image is vital to selling our meat overseas. As long as it's between consensual adults and the privacy of their own home, I suppose I have nothing in theory against consensual cannibals. There's always the ick factor, and I hope nobody eats my corpse, but whatever. This is not our meat they were talking about. It's what's left over from beautiful animals killed for our pleasure. How could someone love a kiwi and not care for a chicken? It's beyond me. They are essentially the same animal. Of course, I like my little friends much more than some long-beaked brown lump that can't even fly. The now fully grown chicks still manage to fly up to their nesting beam. It's how we think of animals that makes the difference if they are seen as lovable native animals, the symbol of our country, or as KFC. Elizabeth Collins mentioned me on NZ Vegan Podcast.
And Jordan Wyatt has a new episode out, Coexisting for Non-Human Animals, episode 30. It's actually really, really good. Jordan regularly puts out podcasts. He's tireless. Sam Tucker has new episodes out. He does an episode every week. He has a live radio show, actually, and he podcasts that. So he's got a new episode out. Jordan and Sam have episodes every week. The rest of us are a little bit more erratic.
I love when you mention my show, Coexisting for Non-Human Animals, Elizabeth, but oh man, thanks for the pressure. By being slack recently, I've gone and let you down. Sam Tucker of the radio show Food for Thought is really the only punctual New Zealand animal rights podcaster. You can find Sam's radio show, Food with Thought, just kidding, Food for Thought, fftradio.wordpress.com. I really appreciate everyone with an abolitionist vegan podcast. I listen to your shows while I work, and I feel podcasting is very special. It's like a one-sided talk with your best friends. Sometimes it's nice to just hear what other people have to say about something you yourself are interested in. I've been listening to Gary Francione's past interviews, and a few callers to the radio show stood out in particular.
I used to, when I was a kid, and I do still now, even with my own kids, smash lightning bugs on fingernails and act like they're for rings because I don't know. I was raised having fun outside like that. I've seen myself as well as kids shoot sparrows for target practice. Would I ever harm a dog? No. I mean, there's so many ways of looking at this, and it all has to do with what limits, where do I find the slippery slope inside myself? Do I want to wonder what I'm capable of. Because when you shoot a sparrow out of a tree, you really have very little impact on the
Look,
rest of the world.
Brad, you're speaking for me as well, because I've got that same sort of dichotomy. Professor Francione would say inconsistency in my world. I love my dogs, and yet I want to wring the neck of Michael Vick.
I'd find it rather difficult to talk with someone who felt that way towards animals. Killing insects is your way of, quote, having fun outside. It's sort of like the fishermen or hunters who talk about just enjoying nature. If you want to have fun outside, climb a mountain or bungee jump off a bridge or paddle a kayak. Hurting animals, killing animals, should never be our idea of fun. I recently left my house. Amazing. I'm normally like Bigfoot. People notice when I'm out in public. And found the conversation rather upsetting. Half the people in the room worked at the meat section of a supermarket, a deli, and talked about chopping up chickens, and the other half were talking about hunting. One of the conversations involved some epic hunt, where the shooters had no idea what they were trying to kill. Some kind of goat thing, they said, just that they couldn't let it escape. I was meant to cheer them on, in their displays of manliness. Normally, in these conversations, I'm quiet and I don't draw attention to my veganism. I'd love to know what advice anyone listening has. Should I say something sarcastic like, "Oh boy, the way you kill gentle animals a third your size and weight surely leads me to believe you have massive genitals." Or should I be more serious? You can find me at jaywontdart@gmail.com or on Twitter, jaywontdart. Oh, Emmy asked me why I have the fake name, jaywontdart. Well, it's rather simple. I never want to hide behind a fake name, especially with my friends. It's simply an anagram to make new account registration easy. My real name is, of course, Jordan Wyatt. I never try and hide that. I've mentioned my height, about 1.95 meters tall, my weight, somewhere below 90 kilograms, that I have dark brown, naturally curly hair, green eyes, size 13 feet. I'm not trying to hide anything. Using the name jaywontdart, normally with the J and W capitalized when possible, is just my name, Jordan Wyatt, rearranged, an anagram. I'm certainly not the only Jordan Wyatt on the internet, but so far, I'm the only jaywontdart. I don't want to have a Twitter account of JordanWyattNZ and an email account of JordanWyatt1987, obviously the year of my birth. Creating a fairly unique name means I'm more likely to get future addresses or account names that I'd like, to be consistent. I'm not trying to hide. If you'd like to find me anywhere, just look for jaywontdart. Back to the radio caller who has fun outside. I do find it interesting the excuses vegans get from people who enjoy killing, eating, wearing, using animals. Things such as, oh, it's all about drawing a line somewhere. Well, I don't think we are required to draw a line anywhere. We can snap this hypothetical pencil in half. We can donate the made-up marker pen to a starving child in Auckland. I don't think we should accept excuses about why I do what I do, when it's most likely that people have grown up a certain way, they see that this is the norm in their society, and they are more likely to try and justify their behaviour than, in their eyes, change their entire life. I think by trying to appear calm and reasonable, as if we know what we are talking about, when we have actually learnt about what we are speaking, that people can and will take veganism seriously. There is so much more to animal rights than posing naked or blowing up buildings. Here's another caller from a different show. I've linked to recordings of each whole show in my show notes.
Hey, Nikki in Turnersville for Gary Francione of the Big Talker 1210. Hi.
Hi. Well, initially I was going to make a different point, but since someone else touched upon the religious aspect of things, I don't know where in Genesis it says anything about herbs, although I do know where it says about all the animals being put on the earth for us to consume. So if you're an admitted non-religious person, I would assume that you probably have, beliefs in evolution.
I wanted to interrupt here, because I find religious arguments against veganism to be just difficult for me to take seriously. I went to a Catholic primary and secondary school, and while I'm a very staunch atheist, I don't make a big deal about religion to my friends who believe in a god. In my personal life, I don't think it affects me what people think. I love chickens. I think chickens are perhaps the most incredible animals around, short of insects. But some people might like cats more than they like chickens. I personally think, psh, as if a bunch of hair could stand up to the sheer elegance of feathers. But whatever, it's a personal belief, it's a personal feeling. As long as there are not laws that somehow affect me, I don't feel any need to be a militant atheist, firebombing churches and appearing in "I'd rather go naked than go to heaven" ad campaigns. But even at the religious schools I went to, no teacher would have ever denied evolution, would have chosen biblical interpretations over what is regarded as mainstream scientific fact. I'm sure in 100 years people will look back and laugh at what the people of 2010 thought, in the same way my original iPhone is rather laughable compared to the shiny new iPhone 4, separated by a whole 3 years of evolution. Well, also the intelligent design guided by the hand of Johnny Ive. But I think that science can cope with admitting when a fact is found to be wrong and can change. I liked an NPR Intelligence Squared debate about religion. Is America too damn religious? The topic of what is known as intelligent design being taught to American schoolchildren was brought up. I think intelligent design is almost unique to religious Americans. Even the Catholic popes have agreed that, in the words of Pope John Paul II, new findings lead us towards the recognition of evolution as more than a hypothesis. Like the religious caller talking to Gary Francione, it was suggested that intelligent design was as valid as evolution. Susan Jacoby, an atheist on the panel, set the record straight.
She is suggesting that there is actually debate about evolution versus intelligent design. There is, of course, much debate within the scientific community about many of the particulars of evolution. There is no debate at all in the scientific community about intelligent design on the one hand versus evolution on the other. Furthermore, what Dr. Galston said, certainly intelligent design would be an interesting thing to have in a college course on the history of pseudoscience and religion. That would be good. But to include it in a high school biology class would be to include, for example, the theory of that vortexes were responsible for the Earth turning on its axis. That is not a debate. It's putting nonsense in the same classroom as science, period.
I often worry that the vegans I know are often very anti-science. Many seem more willing to believe in magic healing crystals or raw diets over modern medicine. I think that with the theory of evolution, science is a great friend of veganism, that we can see how we are also animals, we are not different, we too are animals. When you think of animals as being very, very distant family, it's much harder to defend killing 56 billion land animals each year. Back to the religious caller.
So let me ask you this, Professor. Why do we have molars in the back of our mouth? Is it to chew tofu?
Well,
is it to chew meat?
Okay, let me say, first of all, we certainly can't rip flesh from bones. I mean, our teeth aren't equipped to do that. Whatever it is we've evolved, I mean, we're obviously omnivores. We can eat meat, but we have attributes. For example, we have very long colons, and most animals, most carnivores, for example, have very short colons, and there's a clear connection between eating animal products and colon cancer. And the connection between eating animal products and various diseases, hypertension, diabetes, all sorts of cancer, is not not controversial.
Sure.
But Nikki, let me also say, the herb and the seed thing, if you read the first chapter of Genesis, it's the herb and the seed. It's only after the breach of the covenant that killing of animals, when humankind is driven from the Garden of Eden, that humankind begins to kill and to eat animals. There is no killing.
I also thought molars were grinding teeth, better suited for plant material, and that sharper teeth were more for ripping other animals apart. When you look at animals that attack others, predators, they tend to have sharper teeth. Animals that chew plants, herbivores, tend to have larger, flatter teeth. I can't imagine myself getting religious arguments against veganism here in New Zealand, but it's good to always be prepared. I think Gary Francione did a great job answering the question without arguing for or against his personal religious beliefs. I hope I haven't annoyed any religious friends listening in. In future, and in person, I'll try and talk less about me and more about the animals. As well as podcasts, I like to listen to audiobooks at work. A recent audiobook was Stuff White People Like, based on the blog. It mentions veganism twice, well, vegetarian/vegan.
Stuff White People Like, by Christian Lander. Read by Victor Bavine.
32. Veganism vegetarianism. As with many white people activities, being vegan vegetarian enables them to feel as though they are helping the environment, and it gives them a sweet way to feel superior to others. For further evidence, note how the vegetarian world has increasing levels of extremism. No meat, no dairy, no eggs, no fish, nothing that has been cooked, etc. Much like not watching TV, being vegan vegetarian makes white people pretty hard to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Having dinner, going to restaurants, and having them over to watch political debates all become major challenges, as white people will talk about how they cannot eat anything and would rather that the meat and cheese be thrown in the garbage than put into their bodies. But wait, aren't there white people who eat organic, grain-fed, free-range cattle and chicken? Yes, but these white people are racked with guilt, knowing that they are still eating a dead animal, contributing to rainforest deforestation and global warming. Whether you are dealing with a meat eater or a vegan vegetarian, there are many ways to use this information to your advantage. If you require a favor from a vegetarian white person, you should invite them to dinner with your family. When your mother/grandmother offers them a dish with meat in it, they will reject it, saying that they are vegetarian. When the meal is over, tell them that your mom is very embarrassed and that in your culture, rejecting food is the equivalent of spitting on someone's grave. They will then owe you a favor, which can be called in when you need a trip to the airport, someone to help you move, a small interest-free loan, or a place for your friend to crash. If you need to gain leverage with meat eaters, it's pretty easy. They already feel guilty. Just point it out. But what if the person you are interested in is a vegetarian? Not a problem. For some reason, most white people who say they are vegetarians will eat sushi. Apparently, fish aren't cute enough to warrant inclusion with pigs, chickens, and cows.
I've never understood this image of vegans needing to be overeducated, rich snobs, or, for that matter, white. I think any attempt to go after a given race of people would be lame or offensive. For example, I really don't want to be patronizing Maori people when I talk about veganism. Kia ora, bro. Know what some choice as kai? Vegan food, yep. Next time, have a herbivore hungy. I'd be mighty offended if someone treated me differently because of my race. I don't know how to change this idea that only white people can be vegan. I guess it's one of those things to keep promoting veganism, and more people from all around the world will be vegan. For some reason, I found myself watching Dr. Phil clips on YouTube. This one in particular stuck out. It demonstrated the lynch mob mentality of people against cruelty to animals, as in dogfighting.
This dogfighting surveillance video was shot by the Houston District Attorney's Office in 2008. One of the leaders of the ring, Rob Rogers, was arrested and ended up serving 6 months in jail.
You can't possibly think that's okay.
I've never done anything to an animal that's cruel. Animal fighting has nothing to do with violence whatsoever. No different than ultimate fighting, boxing, football.
How many dogs have you killed?
Probably a couple of hundred.
I think dog fighting is despicable. I think it is sick. I think it is disgusting. In New York's war on animal abuse, some of the worst offenders are pursued by a group of tattooed motorcycle-riding tough guys.
You pick on the animals because they don't fight back!
On a mission to save animals in danger. They call themselves Rescue Inc.
Rescue Inc. always wants to give everybody a second chance. You know, we're not angels. We never claim to be angels. We've all been through some pretty rough scrapes in life. Some of us almost lost our lives. And we've got second chances in life, so we want to make sure these animals and everybody else gets a second chance in life. The people who deserve it, you know what I mean?
You know why you enjoy it so much? Because you like the weak.
Like okay, the weak. Yeah, like I like the weak looking at you. You're the weak.
Maybe you want to get tested. Here to help us find new homes for some needy friends, please welcome Paris Hilton.
What do you think about this dogfighting business?
I don't know how anyone could hurt an animal. I kind of want to punch him in the face.
Right. So, when people make dogs fight, sometimes to the death, you pay them to appear on your show, defending something that the vast majority of people are against. You also mention and introduce a bike gang of people who go after those who make dogs fight. These gang members then threaten the fight organizers with violence while wearing leather jackets. And finally, bringing out Paris Hilton, who was known for treating dogs like handbag accessories. Paris then mentioned she'd like to punch the dogfight organizer if that could somehow return the couple hundred dogs to life. This is one of the traps of single-issue campaigns, that certain ways of hurting or killing animals are seen as inhumane, and other ways to kill animals are then, quote, humane. By promoting veganism, there would be no gang members in leather jackets, no overweight TV host in leather shoes, making $90 million in 2009 alone. Best of all, no Paris Hilton. By promoting veganism, Paris Hilton and co. would magically vanish in a puff of smoke, or perhaps steam if we're thinking of Mother Earth. Can railing against dogfighting do the same? Well, according to the Dr. Phil clip, this single issue attracted Hilton to appear. Score one to promoting veganism. I normally don't watch The Simpsons, mostly because the new episodes are terrible, but also because I'm not a big fan of TV in general. On a recent episode that aired, you know, a year ago in America, recent for New Zealand, they mentioned the fictional fast food chain Christie Burger is having unhealthy food. The company focuses on the Mother Nature Burger, which I presume is vegan. The townsfolk enjoy the burger, but soon become sick due to food poisoning. We find out tainted barley is the cause. I don't know about you, but I'm vegan and I don't often eat barley. I don't see what the big deal is. Maybe they were tired of going after soy all the time? And barley sounded weird to them? Whatever. From memory, a single rat had gotten into the harvester. Quote, "Sometimes a rat gets in the harvester, but we washed it out." As if a single rat could make a whole town sick. And another quote, "Where there's barley, there's rats." Well, if that's the only horrible thing about a vegan diet, that a hypothetical rat might get ground up into the food, that's better than a guaranteed animal or animals being served. Of course, eating rats is not vegan, and also not a sure thing. I guess the story writers, many who are vegetarian or vegan themselves, felt the need to balance the story about an obviously meat-free, possibly vegan burger. I quite enjoy knowing that many Simpsons cast members are vegetarian, including the voice of Homer Simpson. There was also an episode of King of the Hill mentioning vegetarians, where the main character's son was lured into being vegetarian because of a girl he liked. At the end of the episode, after being dumped by this evil vegetarian, Bobby eats a ginormous steak in front of her, making a point to have it rare. We see the stupid vegetarian being annoyed, and the episode ends with Bobby's triumph. I've never understood the logic behind saying things like, "For every animal you don't eat, I'll eat three." Is that meant to be funny? Are non-vegans meant to be in stitches when they hear another non-vegan say that? I've never liked eating mushrooms. If someone mentioned eating three times their normal amount of mushrooms in front of me, I wouldn't find it annoying. Of course, killing animals for our pleasure is different, but if I can face the fact that we kill over 56 billion land animals a year, hearing someone joke about eating a few more is not going to break my heart. I think part of this "let's hate vegans" is that we're seen as radical and preachy. I try not to go overboard when I meet new people. I normally won't tell people I'm vegan. I wouldn't tell people I'm against abusing children. Why would I tell them how I respect animals? I don't think people take veganism seriously when we constantly bombard them in what they might deem offensive ways. I often mention how much I love all animals, and I normally end up showing photos of my chicken friends, and yes, I do sometimes say chicken friends in day-to-day life, but I don't wear any t-shirts with "meat is murder" or similar slogans. I don't mind having a podcast talking about veganism to people who I consider friends I haven't met yet, but normally, when I meet new people in the flesh, I've found it best not to go on and on about my veganism. My friends will normally bring it up. I think it's much better to let it just come up than wearing unusual t-shirts and waiting for people to notice. I think it's nice when people like me for who I am, and if, or when, they find out I'm vegan, they won't judge me for it, and they can see that vegans are regular, pleasant to be with people. Last episode, I mentioned a supposed cow's milk sedative. Apparently, New Zealand cow's milk makes 88% of Taiwanese people sleepy. Now, for New Zealanders, we have the opposite, using our beloved cow's milk again. New Zealanders have this phrase, number 8 wire, the number 8 wire mentality. The average rural Kiwi bloke reckons he's something of a MacGyver, able to jimmy up a solution to any problem by using the common fencing wire. I think it's a bit out of date now, but most New Zealanders would still know the term. Of course, this over-reliance on one type of wire does limit our inventing potential. It's hard to imagine the iPhone 4 being made solely from thick fencing wire. When it comes to exports, milk is our number 8 wire. We can solve all the world's problems if only we exported even more cow's milk. If milk can drug Taiwanese people into sleep, then we can probably drug people into staying awake by adding fizziness to milk.
It's milk, but not as you know it. No, it's milk with a fizz. And today it's been creating quite a buzz, not necessarily for the right reasons. The creator of MO2, Richard Revell, has been making headlines because he's not been allowed to sell this Kiwi farming invention at field days. Coca-Cola, who also happened to have a new fizzy milk drink in other countries, is the only company allowed to sell drinks at the show. But hold on, never mind the spat about selling. What are companies doing creating fizzy milk in the first place? Is this a drink anyone really wants? We sent Jill Higgins to find out.
That's bloody good.
It's much better than normal Coke.
It's really horrible.
A healthy fizzy drink or milk with sugar? Either way, it's a drink the like we've never seen before.
And not everybody's going to like it, and we're not expecting everyone to. And not everybody likes water.
Really weird, actually.
Very, very different. Fizzy milk's usually off.
I think it's a strange idea.
So, you know, some people think this is a really weird idea.
Exactly. I mean, that's a good and a bad thing. Good because it created a whole lot of interest. It's one of those drinks where your mind and your tongue are at odds.
Yeah, that's good.
But if you talk about spiders or ice cream sodas, it sort of gets people to think, oh, yeah. I could get my head around that.
Coca-Cola's been getting their head around it too. They're trialling a product called Vio in the States and Japan. But Richard says it's not the same.
No. They're making a product they call fizzy milk. What they're doing is adding sparkling water to 7% milk powder.
Still, both are about adding fizzy fun. And at this school, the idea of basic milk and bubbles was well received.
Excellent. So hands up if you like it. Good.
But the kids were clear it needed something else.
One cup of sugar. A bag of sugar.
Yes, it's sugar. Because like soft drinks, fizzy milk contains about 10% sugar. Now, having said that, most of it is lactose, the sugar that's naturally found in milk, whereas with these two, it's all added.
And the lactose is a natural form of sugar in milk, which your body can digest.
Look, the only advantage probably is in terms of dental health. It may be less likely to cause problems with your teeth. But I think the real advantage is that because it's based on milk, it's got some useful nutrients.
Fizzy milk has about 4 grams of protein per drink. These will only have about 0.4. And fizzy milk has about 140 milligrams of calcium, whereas these have a measly 4 milligrams.
A can of soft drink is just empty calories. You get calories from it and nothing else. Whereas with this, at least you're getting a bit of protein and you're getting a reasonable amount of calcium, which is an important nutrient for children.
But to buy it, you've got to want it. On first taste, our testing panel was impressed.
Tastes a bit like an ice lolly.
I like it. It's a sort of cokey, creamy sort of taste.
But after a few more slurps...
It kind of makes you feel a bit sick. It kind of tastes a bit too creamy.
Then, even later...
After you haven't had it for a while, you kind of want to get back into the taste of it.
And that's a typical kid reaction. One minute they like it, next minute they don't. And that's why it's hard marketing to kids. But it's interesting. I mean, we want to learn for the reasons why people don't like it.
So does Coca-Cola. Its own research on its product, Vio, makes it look heaven sent.
It tastes like I just took a sip of awesome.
It kind of tastes like a happy memory.
Oh, but a very different reaction from a bunch trying it out for themselves.
That's a horrible colour and consistency.
Yeah, colada.
That's so gross.
Richard's actually glad Coca-Cola's got a product on the go.
I think it's great they're doing it because what it's doing is making people more aware that fizzy milk could exist.
And he can handle the fact Coca-Cola's deal with field days means he's banned from selling his product in the showgrounds. Why? Because it's made him a bit of a name.
We've just been escorted off the field days grounds, but yet the people that we're giving the product to are going, oh, good on you, you know, we're glad you could be here, we'd love to try it, we've read about it, we just want to know what it is.
Wow, fizzy.
I don't think any company should need to defend their product so constantly. It's as if the idea is plain nuts that we are almost deered into trying this fizzy milk, as in, bet you can't finish the whole can. I don't think the children on the news piece were drinking the actual MO2 brand of fizzy milk. It was being made by putting water into a SodaStream soda maker and then adding milk. Still, when small children are on television mentioning feeling sick after having a small amount of homemade fizzy milk, it's not a great reflection on the MO2 brand. I guessed the official site for this fizzy milk, as it was normally called in the piece. The actual brand is MO2. What a bad name. It looks like a chemical symbol for a noxious gas. I wasn't sure if it was M0 or MO2. A big difference when you were trying to guess the website. MO2.co.nz is the correct address. So, I just stumbled upon the correct address. I'm concentrating on Firefox to see if I have the correct URL. And then, you know in visual media, when a drug hallucination is represented by flashing colours and oil patterns? Psychedelic imagery? That was my first thought on seeing the giant flash animation, with two cans of this fizzy milk tilting and whirring across my large screen. Mirror images of each can extend behind the product and twirl about for a few seconds before stabilising. I found it very uncomfortable. At the top of the page is the text, "That's the feeling you get from MO2. A milk drink that was born on the edge." Well, I felt like I was on the edge of having a seizure from those spinning cans of fizzy milk. And if epileptic people are still clinging to life, the edge of life, the alternating text flashes between lemonade in blue to cola in red. I find small blinking things annoying, and the way the two side-by-side words change to show the two flavours, I could almost hear a police siren. As I noticed the red and blue flashing bar. Damn flash, see? Steve Jobs is right about this stuff. Flash serves only for Punch the Monkey banner ads and spinning cans of fizzy milk. Next time I look up a bizarre product online, I'll use my iPad to be spared of unsettling animations. Here's an unusual news story. A stock worker was airlifted to hospital this morning after being crushed by a bull at a northern Wairarapa farm. The man was helping load bulls onto a truck at Ikitahuna about 9 a.m. when he was crushed against a rail, Square Trust Rescue helicopter pilot Fergus McLaughlin said. An effluent spreader had to be turned off to allow the helicopter to land in, and this is a quote, "a pile of poo. Everyone smelled a bit when they got on board," he said. The man is being assessed at Palmerston North Hospital and is in a stable condition. I hate how the farming world has all sorts of euphemisms. When I think of farmers, I normally notice them being against so-called politically correct terms. But there they go, calling animal waste, my polite term, effluent. And a big metal thing that throws this proverbial animal waste about is called an effluent spreader. I never mention stories of farmers or freezing workers being hurt by the animals they kill in an attempt to be funny. I don't think it's ever nice to laugh at someone's misfortune. I personally hate when animal rights people share videos online about bullfighters getting killed with their comments of, "I wish all farmers would die too." People who are not vegan now are no different than I was before I were vegan. I wouldn't wish an accident on anyone. I'm including this story in an attempt to mention all the behind the scenes of animal agriculture. I often read farming websites, and when you read the laundry list of jobs involved with animals that are just plain disgusting, it's hard to argue against veganism. For example, when you buy eggs, there's no mention of the male chicks being killed while being a day or so old on the box. A farming message board I am on recently had a discussion about offal pits, where the farmers kill animals and dump all their waste, you know, organs essential to life, into giant holes. The farmers then casually mention the smell and how rats are attracted to these offal pits. These issues simply never come up with the farming of crops. I mean, I know compost isn't always attractive, but it's got to beat the smell of rotting guts dumped into a hole covered by a metal door. I think by mentioning all that goes into animal products, including the happy ones, that veganism is obviously a better lifestyle. Talking about how animal byproducts are taken doesn't mean we need to focus on obvious animal abuse videos with animals being beaten. There will always be shocking actions inherent to farming animals to be killed. Another example of our number 8 wire mentality, a strange way to make paper. The end result looked somewhat non-white, but that could be intentional, or because the, quote, paper had not been bleached yet.
Now, if you'll excuse my French, our next story is pure bullshit. In fact, it's about pure bull's poo being turned into pure paper. Where else but Bulls, the New Zealand capital of bull excrement? Here's Richard Langston.
Andrew Riley is a papermaker, and his art has taken a surprising turn. Basic, earthy, pungent.
I've had friends who introduce me and say, this is Andrew, he makes crepe paper. I've had a Wins case officer say, oh, now you can say you're a complete bullshit artist.
Andrew's not the first papermaker in the world to make use of what animals drop.
There's a paper company in Wales that do sheep dung, and the Australians have kangaroo, and Tasmanians have wombats. So being based in bulls, and with that really solid connotation that bullshit has for everyone.
Inspired, his search began to find the choicest supply of dung in the Manawatu.
Given where Andrew lives, bulls, he found it mildly difficult to find some bullshit.
I thought, well, where should I start? Probably the best place is the local veterinary service. So I went in there because I just thought, I can't do this over the phone. Because someone will just think it's a crank call.
Enter bull farmer Phil Transom, who has a herd of 50 bulls 10 minutes from bulls.
There's been a lot of dairy conversions around the area in the last few years, so there's probably less around than there used to be, but yeah, there's still a few guys farming bulls around.
It was Emma, Phil's wife and fellow farmer, who took the call from Andrew at the local vet service.
And I'm like, is this guy serious? There's plenty around here, but he couldn't quite find any. So I said, good, we've got plenty at our place. There's lots of bullshit, cow shit, and a lot of other shit carrying on.
So, Phil, what did you make of it when Andrew said he wanted your bullshit?
I thought he was yanking my chain, to be honest. But I have had it suggested to me by a few of my mates that this is a very good place to come for bullshit.
And they do make lots of shit.
Yeah.
So it's good to actually do something positive with it.
20 minutes of shoveling, and Andrew has enough bullshit to make 200 sheets of paper. He soaks it for a week, sifts the fibre out, and cooks it for 12 hours. After 3 weeks of stirring, yes, he's a shit stirrer, soaking and bleaching, he has the solution he needs. And he's ready to, what's known in the trade, as pull a piece of paper.
So that's it, Andrew?
Yep.
You have made a piece of paper?
It's a piece of paper, yep.
In case you're wondering, the paper is odourless and tasteless and purely local.
It's genuine bullshit paper, so because one, it's gathered within 10 minutes of bulls, it's from local livestock, it's processed in bulls, it's handmade in bulls.
And the good news for a man turning bullshit into bullshit paper is a never-ending supply. And there ends our crap story.
Sorry to put you through those awful puns. Perhaps you found that whole clip unbearable. Trying to find new ways of using animal waste sounds like an attempt at lemons to lemonade, although I don't find lemons to be disgusting. To follow my earlier story, there are some inevitable outcomes of farming animals to be killed solely for our pleasure. There will always be tons of animal waste, no matter how nice the string band on the way to the gas chamber is, and no matter what term you call it, animal waste, or effluent. Rather than find new ways to use some of it, I'd rather not have it in the first place. Thank you for listening to Coexisting with Non-Human Animals, truly a memorable episode. You can find the script for this episode, as well as downloads for every episode of Coexisting with Non-Human Animals at coexistingwithnonhumananimals.blogspot.com. If you want to contact me, even just to say you loved all my bull jokes, send an email to jwontdart@gmail.com or on Twitter, twitter.com/jaywontdart. I'd appreciate it. Thank you for listening.
Away from the ocean of animals as things and toward the moral personhood of animals. The choice is ours. If you're not vegan, go vegan. It's easy. It's better for you. It's certainly better for the planet. And most importantly, it's the morally right thing to do.